Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of So Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Happy Thursday and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Michelle Pache, filling in for Jeannie, and I'm here today with Dr. Michael Rice. We warmly welcome you to the show, and thank you for choosing to be with us. Today is November 20th, 2014. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk with our host. We encourage you to call in with your comments or questions, allowing you to actively strengthen and deepen your practice. So now let's welcome Michael in the process of learning and experiencing Aramaic forgiveness.
Well, thank you, young lady, for that introduction. It's a delight to be here. We're blessed to have this opportunity to share this space with anyone and everyone who chooses to call into the show and be part of the process. Beautiful sunny day here in Bristol, Tennessee. Still chilly, it's 42, but not down in the teens like it was in the last day or two. So it's pretty nice, white fluffy clouds in the sky, lots of sunshine, gorgeous day. Holding a space for those folks up in Buffalo who just gotten 6 feet of snow. How crazy is that? And we're moving forward with bringing this work to every mind, heart, and being on the earth. That's our task. That's our process here. And so we're delighted to have this space to share with you. And today the focal point that I'd like to bring forward is developing is how to develop the discernment to be able to tell the difference between the true experience of a human life, the true experience of being, and the cheap copy that the world gives us to take the place of it. You know, for everything that is true in the spiritual dimension, there is a cheap copy. And the world has pretty well been taken over by the cheap copy. That is, virtually everything you see, everywhere you look, instead of the true experience of human life, you see something that pretends to and sounds like human life, but really isn't. For instance, we think that because we look at what we call a human body, that there must be a human in there. And the truth is, in most cases, there's no human life active within the body of people on this planet. And how do we establish that? How do you arrive at that idea? Well, if you've ever held a newborn child, you've had a direct experience of what human life is. It is this awesome, active presence of love. And each of us is designed to function out of that awesome, active presence of love. And the thing that happens with the real thing is that it simply expresses and experiences the presence of love. It doesn't matter what's going on around us. If we're living out of being, then love is present within our physiology. Now, the non-being world, you know, we'll offer that there's being and there's non-being. You know, when Jeannie opens the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop, she asks the question, how many pounds a newborn child? Describe the essence of your newborn. And every word that we get in response to the essence of the newborn is some variation on the theme of love. Why would that be? Well, my offering is, the reason is because everybody knows exactly what human life is. And human life is this awesome, active presence of love. So we have people who function out of rage, of guilt, of fear, murder, slaughter, mayhem. And the excuse they use for their mayhem is, oh, well, I'm just human. My offering is that you are not just human. There is no frailty in a human life. The cheap copy of a human life is the place where the frailty exists, where it seems that there is weakness, there is stupidity, there is hostility or fear. But that's not human life. We've been sold a bill of goods. If we've ever used the excuse, oh, well, you know, I'm only human for my weakness and my frailty, we've been sold a bill of goods. We've been convinced that non-human life is human, and it's not. You know, a second question that Jeannie asks when she opens the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop is, how many have ever done something they regret? And then we invite people to describe what it was that they were feeling that motivated them to do what it is they now regret. And, you know, 100% of the time that someone describes what they were feeling when they did something that they regretted, it is always some variation on the theme of hostility or fear. The word love never shows up. So when you look at this list of hostility and fear-based attributes, rage, guilt, grief, hatred, vengeance, what you find is non-human life pretending to be human. And, of course, this non-human life talks about love. Oh, I love you, I love you, I love you. But there's an easy way to distinguish is whether or not there's a human life in there. Violate a goal that someone has for you that says, I love you, and see how long their proclamation of love lasts. Thing is that very quickly, the active presence of love will be replaced by some form of hostility or fear. And they'll take their whole gay bag of garbage and dump on you. I mean, even a parent, I was working with some parents recently, and, you know, I mean, really high-quality people. And yet when the stress is up and the chips are down, and I ask, well, what is it that you do with your child when they're not fulfilling your goals? Oh, I whip them. I shake them. So are we dealing with human life here? Or has human life been disappeared? My offering is the cheap copy of love, the non-being copy of love. Everything from the right side of the board. When Jeannie asks those questions on the left side of the board, she's got the list of the attributes of being. It's love, it's generosity, it's sweetness, it's beauty, it's purity, it's awesome presence. And on the right side of the board, it's hate and fear and rage and guilt. When people talk about what they were feeling that motivated them to do what they now regret. The non-being's cheap copy of love is approval. So you can tell whether there's real human life there or not. Just do something that somebody disapproves of and see what happens. Is love still present? Is that the experience? If it's not, then you know that you're dealing with a cheap copy. And of course, when you apply that to yourself, you really got to start to own up to, am I experiencing life as a human being? Or am I experiencing the cheap copy? And the list goes on. I've actually started making notes for a book that will be one of my future projects. A little too much on the plate right now to be writing it. But look at just about every arena of life. You know, the focal point of our work is forgiveness. And in the first century Aramaic language, the word forgive means remove. If I'm in pain, if I have some sort of trauma or turmoil going on inside of me, and I wish to be finished with it, then I will apply forgiveness and remove the root of my pain or my turmoil. The non-being world has pardoning. Oh, you did it to me, I'll let you off the hook. That's the cheap copy, pardoning. They call it forgiveness. There's no forgiveness in letting somebody else off the hook. How pervasive is the cheap copy? I challenge you to go sit in the largest mass chain bookstore near your home and go sit there and take an afternoon and go through every book on religion that talks about forgiveness and every book on psychology. Find me one book, aside from Why Is This Happening to Me Again, that tells you that forgiveness is about removal. Find me one book that doesn't tell you or ask you the question, how did that make you feel when they did that, as though the cause of your feelings is outside of you? And then find me a book that, when it counsels you to forgive, says, now, you go inside yourself and you remove the root of your hostility, your fear, your pain. You remove your non-human attributes, your non-being attributes. No, I challenge you, sit there all afternoon, read every book you can find. And every book you can find will ask the question, how did that make you feel? And you know you really need to forgive them. That's the cheap copy. It's pardoning. It's not forgiveness. We can go on and on and on. The world is run by the cheap copy. And few are those who escape the control of that game. And what we're looking to do is to open wider the escape hatch, the way to remove yourself from a non-human life and to truly experience yourself and express as a true human being. That is, that the active presence of love is in you 24/7, 365, whatever's happening. So that's what we're here to do. Michelle, is Dr. Tim with us today?
Yeah, he's here. Hi, Dr. Tim.
Hello, man. How do you be?
I'm doing well.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing well.
Anything on your mind today? Loud and clear.
Lots of things on my mind. I'm enjoying the intro and just thinking in terms of different ways to help promote this awareness of that true nature and different ways to help dismantle the belief system that that's not enough. So little by little, I'm chipping away at it. I've had people just in the past couple days, not surprisingly, because these things go in themes, I need them to listen to your intro because it will reinforce almost word for word things I've been trying to tell them in just the past few days. So this theme about accepting the what our true nature is and then allowing things to flow from there. And my ear says it's so similar to the Mayan calendar lecture about consciousness and the need to be able to stay in the flow of intuition, which to my ear is the same as having Rachma and Kubba set before I choose to do anything. Because by definition, that means I will not be in fear and I will not be in anger. And whatever flows from that space of connectedness, love, consciousness, intuition, whatever you want to call it, whatever flows from there is going to benefit everybody. So that's my sharing. It's as usual, it's uncanny that I'm having the same themes come up in my last few sessions as what you were just talking about in your intro. So thank you for that. I'm glad it's recorded. I will have two different people I know listen to it.
Isn't it great, Dr. Tim, how great minds think alike?
Yeah, it is wonderful. It saves a lot
of course,
effort.
Of course, they also say that fools seldom differ, so I guess we just have to decide which category we're
in. I hadn't heard that one.
Oh, yeah. That's another one that's out there.
I heard the one about the admonition against getting into an argument with someone you consider to be an idiot. The best reason for not doing that is because people watching aren't going to be able to tell who's who.
There you go. Well, there's another good example of the cheap poppy. You know, people have a discussion, and our world says, well, why don't we set up a debate? And the root of the word debate is to beat. And, you know, again, it's the cheap copy. It sounds like a similar thing to a discussion, but, oh, it's not. And you look at the fact that, you know, they take kids in school and they get them to join the debate club, the club for beating others. And it's like, how bizarre is that? How insane is that? You look at the focus in our culture on competitive sports and how great that's considered to be and how wonderful that is for people's future. And if, in fact, Einstein is correct when he says, if you think you're separate or separated from the rest of humanity, you're living in an optical delusion, then who is there to compete with? But if we work to beat others and to compete with others, then in essence what we do is we're beating on ourselves. We're knocking ourselves down. I really think that every school system that has any kind of focus on competitive sports, for every dollar that's spent, for every minute that the administration and teachers are involved, coaches, and for every minute that the students are involved, then the same amount of money and time should be spent where if we're competing with the school across town, then that team, this team, the coaches, the teachers that are involved all get together and work cooperatively, spend the same amount of money on how do we help Mrs. Jones down the street who can't paint her house? How do we cooperate in making our community a better place? How do we cooperate in fixing up that park, in taking care of that piece of property, in cooperating and producing real, true human life and true human results? Because if we catch up with the physics, again, listening to Einstein, if you think you're separate or separated from the rest of humanity, you're living in an optical delusion. Our mind shows us a cheap copy of human life, and it looks like something external, and it looks like something physical. And it's just, you know, it's time for us to get past that. And the challenge of that, you know, this is, to me, a very exciting time to be alive. And at the same time, when you recognize we're at the receiving end of 1,000 generations of people living in the cheap copy. You just have to look at how many people have been murdered in the last century or two or three or four. I was listening recently to an audiobook about the wars going on around the time of Yeshua in Rome and with the Romans, and that, you know, they just go in and slaughter 200,000, 300,000, 500,000 people. And, you know, slaughter wasn't the easy slaughter that it is today. You drop a bomb and you don't even have to look. Slaughter was up close and personal. It was a sword at somebody's throat. You know, it was just, it's like, how bizarre does it get? And to recover from all of that, to perhaps be the first generation that's really conceived of this idea of loving your neighbor, of being love, actually, there's another good cheap copy. When we hear the Greeks translate the first directive that Yeshua gives, the prime directive, the Greeks say you're supposed to love your neighbor and the creator as yourself. Cheap copy. You go to the original Aramaic, it's got nothing to do with doing something to your neighbor or doing something to the creator or to yourself. In Aramaic, it's to maintain the condition of love in your mind, which is a way to inoculate yourself against the non-being world. Maintain the condition of love in your mind when you think of the creator, when you think of neighbor, and then it says in order to maintain self. And so to go back to the real thing is just, it's just an amazing process. And to recognize how long and how deep the brainwash is that needs to be undone, it's amazing. Any other thoughts in that regard, Tim?
Well, just that I echo it. It's, this is another thing I was talking to somebody about yesterday. In looking at one of the main themes from
the Mayan calendar video, Ian's talking about how these periods of destruction and disruption, as intense as they have been over our history, are getting less and less, but only as more and more people are moving toward higher levels of consciousness, awareness, staying in their intuition, staying connected to love. And there was somebody who said, I want to be just sitting here on my couch, drinking my beer and watching TV, and I want my wife to go out and be part of that little leavening that leavens the whole loaf or the critical mass. And I'll just wait for that shift to happen. And the conversation yesterday was about how you can miss the boat. You can choose not to receive love that someone is sending you. You can choose not to have the benefits of your own intuition and loving consciousness. So, you know, this is for each of us to do for ourselves, and that is, Ian says in his lecture at one point, this is the only use, true use of your free will. That is the choice to stay focused on something that keeps you in your intuition, that keeps you in that loving space. And you can choose not to as well. You can choose for anger and fear and hostility. You can choose to defend your position and choose to be right rather than happy. That's a choice you're always going to have. However, somebody else can't come along and do it for you. People, as you just finished saying, they can't love you. That's not a verb. They can't make you be something you aren't or that you choose not to stay connected to. So don't miss the boat. Get on board.
Put the pen to the paper and use the tools. Undoing the non-being life. Actually, the book that I started several years ago and have not yet completed yet, there are two chapters of it on the website that are in audio tracks. A dear friend of mine who passed recently, Don Jackson, played the part of the character. It's actually very much written in the vein of my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again, where I'm teaching and this character is asking questions. In this new book, it's Yeshua teaching. And the title of the book is The End of Suffering, Resurrecting the Original Aramaic Yeshua the Christ. And Yeshua starts out and says, you realize they killed me twice. First they killed my work, my teaching. Pardon me, first they killed my body, then they killed my teaching. And I've actually considered authoring a book called Will the Real Yeshua Please Stand Up? It was a TV show back a few years ago where they, you know, would have three or four people pretending to be someone. You had to select who the real thing was. You look at the hostility, the fear, the guilt, the terror that's done in Yeshua's name by so many people, and yet here's a man who says, I come to bring you life and bring it more abundantly, and that the teaching is about the active presence of love. I actually had a minister contacted me several years ago and was asking if he could use a page of the Kabor's manuscript as a background for the cover of his book. And he shared with me that he had been a preacher for 50 years and had had a total breakdown, just totally got to the point where he could not read a book. He could not watch television. He could not do anything. He just was in total breakdown for a year. And you know, my offering to him was, well, you were actually in a major healing process. You weren't in breakdown at all. It was time to break down the insanity in your mind. And after a year, he picked up the Bible, and he was just shocked because he realized the Bible was about love. Now, of course, that's given lip service in the non-being world. You know, we love our neighbor, but boy, if they don't believe the way we do, then we're going to condemn them right straight square to a fiery place for eternity. And we're sure that we're doing that on God's behalf. And, you know, I mean, you just look at, you know, there's another example of the cheap copy of the real thing. The active presence of love holds a space and is in that space for everyone, including the enemy. And, of course, in the non-being world, if you happen to hold a space of love for the enemy, you become the enemy and they'll kill you. So it's, you know, it's just so bizarre. And the recovery from that is so huge. So huge. And personally, it can be done. How this man 2,000 years ago understood the tools with which to do it, especially that awesome tool of forgiveness, I don't know. But if you listen to the show and it sounds interesting to you, we invite you to go to our website, www.whyagain.org. And there's a bullseye in the middle of the page. Click the bullseye. And when you do, you will see a whole series of links, and it will start to explain to you the process of forgiveness, how to remove from your mind the cheap copies that keep you fooled and keep you thinking that you're living a human life when love is not present. And as that happens, what occurs is love shows up more and more and more at every instant of your life. And that's a pretty awesome thing to have happen. Michelle, how do you be, young lady? Do you have any thoughts on our topic or anything to share? Anything up for you today?
Not today. I worked through some stuff yesterday, actually, while the show was going on.
I heard Jeannie was sharing with me you had some things come up yesterday. That was cool.
Yeah. But, you know, tonight we're going to be seeing Gail here in town. So I'll get an opportunity to see some folks in person and use my responsibility communication tools.
Cool. Awesome.
And in the chat room, we're talking about actually, you know, right way back at the beginning when you had mentioned about child abuse and, you know, you mentioned somebody about whipping the child, and that's kind of been the theme. We're just discussing it and our own parenting histories and, you know, how we relate to that concept.
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, we had, Jeannie and I were working with a couple and around an issue with their child. And the word that she used, you know, when she was in a lot of emotion when she spoke about it, is, you know, whipping her son. And then a few minutes later, her husband spoke up in a similar circumstance. He wanted to shake his son and, you know, had some fairly strong expression on his face and, you know, using his hands as in shaking. And it was interesting because it was a period of maybe 6 or 7 minutes. And 6 or 7 minutes later, this woman says, oh, well, I would never do anything like that with my son. Like, it was her husband who was, you know, in violence toward the son. And I just had to tap her on the shoulder and say, man, 5 minutes ago you were talking about whipping your son. That's a pretty violent word. But literally 5 minutes later, could not even remember what was happening. There's a gentleman who was at one of our intensives recently and around some really major, major issues, and justifiably, if there's ever justification for disturbance and upset, this person's life was a justification, as the world would interpret it. And in the moment where the opening was there, we're doing a worksheet, and ask, what are you feeling? And he's in touch with rage and anger. And literally, though he had written it on the page, 5 minutes later, oh, no, I don't have any upset about that. No. I just work toward creating peace in that situation. I have no upset. It's like, look at your words. Look what you wrote on the page. And, you know, this is what, you know, part of what led me yesterday to talk with Dr. Tim and mention the idea of multiple personality, that oftentimes one persona doesn't know what the other one's doing. And, you know, we just lose contact with it. And it's just amazing. And I realize more and more that when it comes to the power person dynamic, and that power person dynamic is active in someone, virtually everybody on the planet is a true multiple personality. And the recovery from that, you know, I've had psychologists over the years who said to me the only thing they've seen that integrates multiple personalities is the reality management worksheet, a genius piece of work from the first century by a man named Yeshua. Again, I don't know how he had that handled and how he was able to put that together, but it's certainly pretty awesome, pretty awesome. So let's see if we've got anything else going on in the chat room, or if there's anybody with a hand up.
No hands up right now. So certainly the line's available if anybody has anything to process or questions, comments on what the discussion has been so far.
So our call-in number is 646-200-4169. And you'd be next in line if you push 1. Michelle would see a little hand go up in the control panel, and she'd introduce you by your area code. So ask your question. If Tim and Michelle and I were on a platform live in your town, and you were sitting in the audience and hearing our conversation over the last 30 minutes, I know without question you've got questions. Well, what about, I know the questions are there. Maybe you're shy. And if you are, then I invite you to just take a breath and let go of your shyness. And maybe your voice will be a little shaky because you're on the radio. There's a worksheet. So let it go. Push 1. Ask your question. That's what we're here to support. Anything happening, Michelle?
Let's see. Nope, not right now. Do you remember when we were, oh, there we go. 901 has got a hand up, and I've turned on their mic. Hello, who we've got calling?
Probably Brenda from Memphis.
Yes, Memphis. Hello, Michael.
Hey there, young lady, welcome.
Thank you very much. I'd like you to comment, please, when you were talking about, you know, that we could love our you know, God, neighbor, self, on that neighbor in the Aramaic is anybody we think of, and you were talking about the worksheet, or about, yes, the people who were doing the worksheet and were expressing these thoughts of rage and such, but then couldn't remember it later. And it reminded me of when you were talking about how, and the people said, well, I would never do that. But I remember us having a discussion one time in regard to what happens when we have people, for instance, child molesters, and you have an incident of a child molester in a community, and it's all over the news, and people instantly go into this rage about this child molester, and that when all of these minds focus on their rage to the child molester, and that they would never do anything, but they have rage against the child molester, that what it can do, and we see as things happen where you'll have one incident, and then a few days later another incident, and a few days later another incident. And your explanation was that all of those minds thinking in that rage, even though they wouldn't do it, can trigger enough energy into somebody who would never think about child molesting, but it vibrates that energy where they would then become that. So if you could address that, I would like to hear that again.
Do you have any thoughts in that regard, Dr. Sam?
Well, I think in terms of how everything is energy and morphogenic fields, and how
we are constantly connected, and they've been able to demonstrate this scientifically in the quantum physics realm. So it isn't that the energy forces someone into a behavior that they would never do. It's that if people haven't been trained to take full responsibility for everything they're thinking and feeling, if they're trained to believe, you made me angry, this situation is overwhelming, that's scary, you insulted me. In that context, the mind that has been trained to believe that what it experiences is coming from outside of it. And then you have minds all around, let's say just in a community, that become aware of a child abuser. And all those minds think, I want to abuse that abuser. I want to punish that person who abused this child. I want them to feel 10 times the pain they inflicted on that child. That energy of anger, trying to cover up that level of hurt, is radiating out through that community and can resonate in the mind of somebody who has the capacity. We all have the capacity to do angry, bitter, abusive, harmful behaviors. But it strengthens that part of their mind that holds hurt. It resonates that part of their mind that holds anger and hurt and confusion and the thoughts of abuse. And it, if they've been conditioned to believe that's not something they have control over, then they may be much more likely to go out and abuse. And at a level, they were consciously saying, I have never wanted to abuse. I didn't really feel angry or wasn't consciously aware of wanting to harm anybody or feeling angry toward anybody. I just got overcome by the energy, by the situation, by my emotions, or as Michael was talking about earlier, this multiple personality. Another aspect of myself kicked in from an unconscious level and drove my behavior. A solution to that pattern is if we start teaching people that anybody who does anything that's less than love is either somebody who is, well, it's not either somebody. It's somebody who does not know about their own capacity to be the essence of love, to achieve whatever they can achieve in life without hurting other people. And so every behavior that we look at as harmful and abusive and can easily be seen as a cry for help and healing. Because every behavior we see coming from another person really isn't coming from another person. It's coming from the collective. We're all connected. And if I watch somebody do something harmful or hurtful to somebody else, and I judge it negatively, the only reason I could judge that negatively is because I've known that very energy. I have known the energy of wanting to punch somebody or murder somebody or isolate them and make them feel lonely. That's how I can know that it's wrong for somebody else to do that. And it's a real tricky thing when you've been conditioned to think you're separate and you're living in your own separate mind and body and that you don't really have connections to anybody. It's a tricky thing to introduce people to the reality, to the actuality that we're all connected and we all have influences of energies. And at the same time, we're all connected and we all feel the energies of others and feel the influences of happy and sad. And we all have the infinite capacity to choose the focus of our conscious awareness. So, you know, it gets very tricky when you start talking about that because people want to then say, oh, so you're saying we caused him to abuse this other person. And no, it never happens that way. The person can decide to do a behavior because they're not aware they have a choice to do something different. But if a person is educated and trained accurately into how we're all connected and we all create our own internal experience by what we choose to focus our thoughts on, and that love, that essence of our true nature, if we focus on that, it can help dismantle everything that's less than itself. If that's the training and conditioning, then a person can stand in a room full of raging people and still stay connected to their true nature as love and not decide to go along with the mob action. If they haven't been trained that way, the default is, yeah, that made me, this made me, that made me, she made me. I don't know what came over me. I wasn't in my right mind. When in fact, it's always possible to tap into that spiritual capacity and choose differently. That would be my offering.
I'm in 100% accord with what you said, Tim. And, you know, when we recognize we live in a resonance universe, if we can get a million minds to resonate in rage toward the abuser, then because of the way that resonance works, that million minds focused in rage is going to tend to activate the rage in other people, and it's going to tend to support and assist in us moving to insanity. And there's another place that I'd like to point out and refine where we've got the real thing and the cheap copy, and it's hard to hear the difference. And if you go back, you'll recognize, Brenda, what I said was that the Greeks translated it as love the creator, love neighbor as yourself. That's not what was said, however. If we try to do the cheap copy, if we try to love the creator, if we try to love our neighbor, if we try to love ourselves, we'll be looking for love in all the wrong places. Not going to ever work. More correctly, Yeshua instructed there, the word that was used, it was translated as love, is the word rachma in Aramaic. And rachma is a Rachma is a gateway in the frontal lobes of the brain that is the entry point for human life, for love into the human system. So in essence, what Yeshua was saying was, have the precursor to functioning as love, not loving your neighbor, loving creator, loving self, but have the precursor cause rachma active in your mind so that when you think of the creator, you are love. When you think of your neighbor, you are love. And then, you know, the final tale of that one where the Greeks say, as yourself, it isn't as yourself, it's order in order to maintain self. This was the way to maintain a human life, what that instruction was about. But we've gotten all confused in this thing of we're going to love our neighbor. And it's to be love in the presence of anyone you think about is to maintain your own human life and sanity. Does that make sense, Brenda? Did that kind of cover what you were looking for?
Well, yes, it did. And I have found that it helps me whenever I hear something on the news that is disturbing to do a worksheet around that so that I do whatever I possibly can to not join the herd energy going out toward something, an event that is unpleasant or that I have a negative reaction to.
And if an event that we hear about resonates hurt in us, it's really urgent and important to recognize I'm hurting right now, and hurting is not natural for a human being. Love is natural for a human being. So I'm going to apply forgiveness to remove my hurt, because even if I don't focus on it, it's still an energy that supports hurt in the world. As I choose to be responsible for the parts of me that hold the energy of hurt, and I forgive, that is, I remove hurt, then I'm freed of it, and the world is freed of the influence of my hurt, or my fear, or my rage, or my guilt, or whatever it is. Then, thus the importance of really, truly owning what comes up in us, being able to acknowledge and recognize, yeah, I've got rage here. Man, I've got upset. And my mind's telling me that this upset's about this situation, but the truth is, I know that this situation can't cause my upset, but I've got some, and so now I'm going to apply forgiveness to move through it. And that's such an important piece of the puzzle. So, great question. Thank you. Any other thoughts on your mind?
Is there anybody else in line with their hand up?
I don't know. Let's ask Michelle.
There's a couple people with the hand up right now.
Okay, let me end for today and let some other people ask questions, all right? And I'll just keep listening. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Sunny's on the phone. Oops, I pressed Rex. Hold on, she was first. Sorry, Rex. Sunny, hi.
Hi.
I'm glad you called. I just want to say something before you start. After your conversation earlier this week with Michael, it really hit home for me, and I texted him and I said, that was a good thing to hear, Michael. I need to be reminded myself to shh, and it's not exactly the best character trait for a therapist to have. And so I got all the same impact emotionally and the wisdom in his words. But thank you for being the brave face who had to go through that. I don't know So anyway, thank you for volunteering.
Yes, and the reception and the phone can do that to us too. But yes, I did some worksheets, Michael. Thank you very much. And that was quite the offering. And I did have an opportunity to ask my daughter if, in fact, that were the case for her, and she explained no, which is very helpful and progressive with her therapy that she's receiving. And I came on the show late today because I have been on the phone with her therapist. He's wonderful. But part of what you and Dr. Tim were discussing when I got to get on there today, and being that active presence, without too much story, I was in a courtroom setting today, which was potentially, it was not a fun scenario, potential scenario for me. And as long as I can hold that space that I have learned from you, and I was able to talk to Rex after my experience with you yesterday to prepare for today as well. Thank you, Rex. God bless you. While I was in that hearing room, everything went well for everyone there, because I pray as much for myself, for others, as I would myself, and just holding that space. But there were some interruptions where I had to leave the hearing room and run back and forth. And whenever I was absent, I would come back in being hauled off to jail. And so I just sat there and amped up the energy as best I could. I got the love for these people, and I had to process my sorrow very quickly for those who met with that scenario, the adversity. And I sat there and I was like, okay, it's kind of like, what would Jesus do? What would Michael be telling you right now? What did Rex tell you yesterday? And as I did so, my own attorney, who was not supposed to be there, came in, addressed the clerk, and apparently my daughter and I are on the brink, Markayla and I, the brink of putting an end to the rhapsody of the past 13 years with her father. because our matter was released. I didn't even have to go in front of the judge. My attorney said, get your coat, let's get out of here. And holding that space of love. And I can't tell you what this
definitely
is meant
powerful.
Yes,
it's
very, very
powerful.
And
how can we support you today? What's happening that we can support you with today?
The process here of keeping above Hydra, if I can, is I would like everyone to please hold a space for the healing, continued healing and progress for her father, and that we can come to an amicable agreement. And I'm just keeping, just continuing to hold that space, and because the healing,
we're here.
It's a lot, Michael. God bless you, all of you. Thank you. We have maybe one more hurdle to cross, and thank you.
We hold the space, and all opens easily and moves quickly. All right, blessings.
Thank you.
All right. Michelle, you've got another hand up.
Hello, friends. It is Rex.
Hey there, good sir. Welcome.
I'm enjoying the program, and my guest Dale and his daughter, Lucy, just came in. And so I just wanted to briefly mention that Dale is doing an awesome workshop this evening in Lansing at the Unity of Greater Lansing on the north side. And anyone and everyone is welcome. We're real excited about it. We should have a pretty nice-sized group coming, and we're excited about him being here.
Well, I'm excited, too, and your whole community is abundantly blessed by his presence.
Absolutely. So I choose to mention that and wanted to bring it out so that everybody knew. I know Michelle mentioned that she would be coming tonight. It would be great to see you as well, Michelle. And just welcome everyone, and God bless everyone in our community. And thank you.
All right, is Dale there that he might want to say a hello?
Well, he's not available to say hello at the moment. I'll put us back on mute, and when he comes back on, I'll see if he wants to, and then I can just kind of chime in. Would that be okay?
Well, maybe he's got a teaser. Maybe he's got a teaser for us for Aramaic Fridays for tomorrow.
Awesome. I'll see what he says. I'll check with him when he becomes available.
Okay.
All right? Wonderful. Well,
hi,
I'm just going to I'll mute my phone on my end so I can just politely tap back in, Michelle, so you can leave me on, if that's okay.
Sure.
Come on
over
with me tonight.
Tonight at 7 o'clock, Dale Allen Hoffman is in Lansing, Michigan at Unity of Greater Lansing. They're in for a treat. And if you're in the Lansing area or Grand Rapids or anywhere in that territory out there in Pinckney where we did our intensive, get your buttons down there. You will be absolutely thrilled and delighted by what Dale presents. Actually, we co-did a workshop in Asheville last time we were here called Aramaicisms, and it came together so nicely that we're looking at creating a space this winter in Florida to connect and to do a video of a two-hour presentation on Aramaicism, or maybe even 4 hours. Maybe we'll do a two-hour segment on that topic of the key words, and it ties right in, because when you go back to the Aramaic, you get the real thing, and then when you come from the Greek, you get the cheap copy. Most of the way through, that's just the way it is. And so going back to those Aramaic ideas is just so powerful, and is so empowering for who we are as human beings. So we've got about 5 minutes left. Anybody else in the phone queue with a hand up, Michelle? And anything happening in the chat room?
No, not nobody else has a hand up right now in the chat room. The conversation just continues. Actually, it mirrored a lot of what Dr. Shim was explaining in terms of the community with the CSC offender and some of those dynamics. So I have an experience of being a physically abused child. Some of the other chatters do, and so you know we're all at different spaces of healing in that, and so we're kind of comparing and contrasting where we see some of our barriers and blocks or areas of denial, and you know pieces in there leading the conversation as always is real helpful from a high vista kind of perspective.
Cool, awesome. Well, maybe Brenda will dial back in quickly and ask her other question if there's nobody with a hand up. And while we're waiting to see if that happens, I'll just share that we're complete here in Bristol. So we did our last workshop last night. And then we're going to get some family time in through Thanksgiving. And then the day after Thanksgiving, we'll be on the road and heading to Wilmington, North Carolina. And Sunday morning, the 30th of November, we'll be doing a Sunday service at Unity of Wilmington. And Sunday afternoon, a free WISE is happening to me again. Actually, Monday night, we're going to be off. There's a Laws of Living class that Suzanne Darnell is doing. And so Jeannie and I will actually be working with her Laws of Living class and taking them through some still point breathing work and doing the evaluation. It'll be the last week of the class. So we're just happens to be perfect timing. So we took Monday night off and from the workshops. But then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we'll be at Unity Wilmington doing a series. And then Saturday, we'll do Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing. And then actually Sunday, we're going to do the Sunday service again. And once we complete with that, we'll be on the road again, heading to Florida. We'll be out in the panhandle of Florida, doing some workshops at a couple different places, Unity of Fort Walton Beach and Lake City. And then on down into Tampa, St. Petersburg. And then down into the southeast coast, Florida. So keep an eye on the schedule. And in April, Jeannie and I will be doing concurrent intensives. We'll be doing a 9-day Healing the Whole Woman workshop. And I'll be doing a 9-day Why Is This Happening to Me Again. Those two workshops will run concurrently. And then they'll meld into a 12-day teacher training. So if you're interested in taking your work to the next level, ladies, you'd be in for a major treat with Jeannie doing the whole Healing the Whole Woman workshop. It'll be, I'm sure, just an awesome space. The feedback I'm getting from the ladies that she's working with is just monumental. And, you know, Jeannie shared a little bit about her challenges in life and having worked through them. You know, you can only really talk about something that you've worked through personally. And so she's done some just amazing, amazing work in her own life and passing that experience on to others in the most generous and awesome way. So if you jump on our website, www.whyagain.org, you will see the link to intensives, and you'll see the 9-day flyer for Why Is This Happening to Me Again that I'll be doing, the 9-day flyer for Jeannie's Healing the Whole Woman, and both of those workshops will be qualifiers for teacher training, which will follow up with a 12-day teacher training. We've got a beautiful facility in Orlando, a Heritage Inn Hotel, and we'll be doing the full fresh and raw food as we do at Heartland and all things moving forward. So we'll look forward to sharing that space with you. And beyond that, we'll then be heading on the road and heading in the direction of Heartland. I think we're going to be doing something in St. Louis before we get back to Theodosia and getting ready to our summer season, which we still actually don't have our schedule together, but we're working on that. So we hope your day is blessed and that you will bring a stranger to the show tomorrow, introduce somebody to the worksheet, walk them through it. And the most awesome gift you can possibly give the world is to create the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com. Evolving continuously.
please.